Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with me, Quiva, and my friend MJ.
Yo, hello, hi, greetings.
Hey, how's it going?
It's been a long week.
Fair enough.
How are you? Hello, listeners.
Do you want to elaborate on that or just leave it mysterious?
I'll leave it. Well, last week I kind of nearly died a bit.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, kind of sucks. I had a bad interaction with some antibiotics. My heart nearly stopped beating. And irritatingly, I am still not 100% after that event, despite my deadlines not really giving much of a fuck. So... that's what I'm blaming it on anyway. I've just been very, very tired and meh, but it might be because it's very January and a little pandemic-y out.
I don't think any of those things helped. I was a bit sick Thursday and Friday. We're recording this on a Sunday now, and I don't know. I'm still a little tired myself, but I think you had it worse than me.
I don't know. I got like one night of no sleep. Where I was like, my blood pressure dropped to a really low level, and I couldn't sleep in case I, you know, kind of died. But then, but then the drugs were out of my system and I was fine. So,
yay! Not dying.
We're very pro not dying on this podcast.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. Journey to the Monkey King. Don't die.
Well, he is, as we've established many times, quadruple immortal. So he's good at not dying.
As I've said many times, the concept of immortality makes me uneasy on a level that I find it difficult to articulate. It's an almost sort of visceral reaction of A, why would you do that to yourself? B, what gives you the right to do that to yourself? And C, it just feels wrong. Just feels very wrong. However, while I don't want to be immortal, I would very much like to not be dead at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I like if you answer me at any given time, would you like to die right now? You know, I feel like barring. Okay, we're getting a bit. Actually, maybe this is getting a bit too much.
I mean, we are millennials. I'm not gonna lie. A lot of the time, that answer is, I mean, yeah, that or a lobotomy would be nice. But
let's get on.
We got a little off track, and we're only 2 minutes into recording.
Yeah, before we
possibly, I should have just said hello and asked you to cut out my bit. But yeah, we're here now. Hello.
Hey. So before we get into the actual chapter, do you remember how I was saying that? Guanyin is a particularly Chinese perspective on a Buddhist figure called Avalokiteshvara.
Is that possibly
Avalokiteshvara? No. Something along those lines.
In that general ballpark.
Yeah.
Again,
I apologize to everyone.
Particularly Buddhists and the Chinese community. I'm gonna be honest, Quiva, I don't. But I am always up for hearing more about Guanyin. I adore and revere and am terrified by her. Which I think is the effect that she's generally going for.
Yeah, so one of the things about Avalokiteshvara, I'm so sorry, as opposed to Guanyin, is he is generally seen as a male figure or a male god.
Yes, we You told me this, and I was very much, yeah, we stan a terrifying trans queen.
So I was doing some reading completely unrelated to this podcast, and I came across a piece of information that I somehow managed to overlook while, like, skimming Wikipedia articles about him before, which is that the Dalai Lama is considered to be an incarnation of Avalokiteshvara.
Huh. Interesting.
So that's
he's
just
gotten a lot more mellow.
Yeah, so that's just an interesting an interesting thing I stumbled across while reading a little bit about Tibet.
Now kind of afraid of the Dalai Lama also.
Don't cross him.
Don't cross him. That's very interesting. Kind of the crossover between cultures there. Well, I suppose they're both Buddhist cultures. Not exactly. There's that strong thread of Buddhism that's. You get what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, I
do words good sometimes. I'm good at wording occasionally.
You almost died. It's understandable.
I almost died. That was like a whole week ago.
Oh, that's fuck. You'd get over that.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So that's what my mom said.
So we're starting into chapter 25, which is the last chapter of the first volume of the editions that I have. So we're a quarter way through we will be a quarter of the way through as of the end of this episode.
Woo! I am excited. We have completed this leg of the journey.
And this chapter is going to feature attempts at both corporal and capital punishment, and boiling oil will be, you know, deployed during this. So I you know, that's the warnings.
Yeah, it's scary, triggering for some, fun Friday night for others.
At the end of chapter 25, the three disciples, Sun Wukong, Zhu Wuneng, and Xiao Wujing, were being correctly accused of stealing and eating the magic ginseng fruit. They have decided to deny all charges.
Deny.
Yeah. So when they're asked, Baji immediately says he doesn't know anything about it. While Clear Bree says, "Oh, it was clearly the one who's laughing. He did it." which is obviously Wukong.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
To which he replies, "I was born with a laughing face. Don't think because you've lost some kind of fruit you can keep me from laughing."
I like the energy on that, I'm not gonna lie.
So Tripitaka appeals to them. He says, you know, we're monks. We shouldn't lie and we shouldn't steal food. If you've eaten it, you owe an apology, and that's all. And
they've eaten some pretty priceless immortal fruit. It may be the fact that, you know, they may need to do a little bit more than just fess up here.
Yeah, Tripitaka actually has no idea how rare or important these are. He has no fucking clue what they are.
Okay, yeah, I forgot. They're just scary baby fruit to him.
Yeah, so Wukong...
Do we ever... Sorry, I'm interrupting you again. I just really need to know. Do we ever get an explanation of why they look like babies?
That's just how they look.
Okay, like there's some pretty obvious symbolism there. I was just wondering if there was anything like in text.
No, I think they, you know, no, they just look like babies.
They just look like babies. Okay, cool.
But Wukong thinks that Tripitaka is actually being pretty reasonable, and he immediately does confess, sort of, not really. He blames Baji, and he says that Baji told him to do it.
Fair.
So this doesn't elicit a positive response from the two immortal lads who... immediately start to hurl abuse at the pilgrims.
They start to what abuse at the pilgrims?
Just hurl abuse at them.
Yeah, cool.
They just start screaming at them, basically.
Okay, yeah.
Which starts to piss off Wukong. So he briefly tries to restrain himself. He grinds his teeth and he starts gripping the golden hooped rod over and over again. But he eventually, his more spiteful side takes over. He decides to get back at them. So he plucks out one of his hairs and changes into a clone of himself, leaving it behind to receive a scolding while he disappears into the clouds unnoticed.
I mean, that's really awesome.
Yeah, they're
I would love that.
They're staring right at him. They don't even notice.
That's amazing. That I am more impressed by that than I am with the fact that he's a portable army. I'm not gonna lie here. Although if something happens to that body, is he gonna feel it? Is this?
That's a very good question that we will actually find the answer out to later.
Yay! Sorry, I will be quiet and patient.
So he goes to the garden with the ginseng tree and just smashes it as hard as he can with the golden hoop rod, uprooting it and toppling the entire thing.
Hmm.
And because the rod is tipped in gold, this also causes all the remaining 22 ginseng fruit in the entire world to fall and hit the ground.
That's not good.
Immediately get absorbed by the ground.
It's now really good ground, really tough, tough ground.
Also, that thing was like literally thousands of miles tall, so that probably destroyed a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. Did they splat? Oh, that's an uncomfortable image of them splatting.
So, Wukong returns to the rest of them without anyone noticing that he left. Meanwhile, Clear Breeze and Bright Moon have been screaming at the rest of them for a while without any of them responding. And they started to wonder maybe they didn't actually steal the fruit, which is strange because they already got a confession. But in any case, they decide these guys have like been completely solid while we're screaming at them. Let's just go double check and recount the fruit to make sure that we were right. And then they see, you know, the entire fucking thing's been knocked over and all the remaining ginseng fruit in existence is gone. Which is not great.
No, it's not. Although, well, it's great if you have a big distaste for the concept of immortality and believe no one should ever have it. But for conservation's sake, or I don't know if they're seeding.
Doesn't make you immortal. It only makes you live for 47,000 years.
I have a question about the germination of the ginseng fruit.
Okay.
I'm confused about this.
Yes.
So the fruit falls from the tree.
Yep.
And generally speaking, although there are many methods of seed dispersal, this would carry the seed in some manner so that there can be another one grown.
Well, there's only one tree in existence, so...
Well, now I'm not fucking surprised because really, if they go in deep into the ground and then the ground becomes literally impenetrable.
Yeah,
does that include by the shoots of a future ginseng tree? Because that seems like an evolutionary dead end to me.
The tree didn't evolve. The tree is actually older than the earth.
Ah, okay. Well, it's clearly not fit for this environment.
Yeah, it's definitely not a product of natural selection.
Yeah, it may in fact be classified as an invasive species.
I think, well, like I said, it's older than the Earth. I think the Earth is the invasive species here.
True. We could get real deep on this, but let's not. We'll move on.
The two immortal lads are not entirely sure how to deal with this, but they come up with a plan. So they go back inside and they tell everyone, oh, actually, we miscounted. All the fruit are accounted for. We're so sorry for being so rude.
Okay. All right.
And they offer everyone a meal. And so as soon as they like make the false correction, Baji decides immediately to castigate them for their quote-unquote mistake.
Dude.
Knowing full well that they ate a load of them.
Don't push it.
While Wukong starts to worry why they're obviously lying. Tripitaka, completely oblivious, just suggests that they just have a quick meal and then hit the road. So as everyone is digging into their meal, the immortal lads start screaming at them some more about knocking down their tree, destroying all the fruit, and then they lock them in, and they lock all the doors in the abbey to keep them shut in, until the Lord Equal to Earth can get back and decide what to do with them.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad plan on behalf of the immortal lads.
So, Tripitaka is less than pleased to hear that Wukong apparently snuck out to destroy their fucking tree, and gives him a piece of his mind. He says, if you were brought before a court, even if your old man was the judge, you wouldn't be able to defend yourself. Which is a phrase he's used before, which makes me kind of curious if it was a common saying.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's nice. I like it. Might use it.
Even if your dad was the judge.
Yeah.
So, Wukong says, don't scold me, master, and he promises to break them out tonight. And Baji worries that Wukong will just change into an insect and escape through some crack in the window and leave them behind. But Tripitaka promises if Wukong does that, he will recite the tight fillet spell.
Yeah, he is basically in bonded servitude. Yeah. Quite literally!
Yeah, they haven't been using that much, which I guess is at least, you know, he hasn't been using the torture device a lot when he could have been, I guess. And Wukong,
at least he's not trigger happy, I guess.
Wukong actually has to explain to Baoji and Wu Jing what Tripitaka is talking about.
Oh, I bet he wasn't happy about that.
He's fairly matter of fact about it.
Huh.
So once it gets dark, Wukong starts the breakout. He points his rod at one of the doors and the lock simply falls off. So that was easy.
Sweet.
Yeah, magic is handy.
Mm-hmm.
So he sends everyone off to get the horse ready and he says he's going to make sure the immortal lads stay sleeping. Tripitaka tells him not to harm them, and he promises he won't. Tripitaka absolutely does not trust him to not just kill them.
Fair. Fair.
But he sneaks into their rooms and he takes out some sleep-inducing insects, which he won in
the fuck?
Yeah, he has these that he won in a bet from Devaraja Virupaksa. Who is the guy he also borrowed the flame retardant cover to save Tripitaka from the fire back with the whole Black Wind King thing ages ago. But yeah, apparently he just has these sleep-inducing insects with him, and he sends them in the window of the two lads' bedroom, and they land on their faces and keep them asleep.
Wait, does that mean he had both the cover and the insects while he was in the red hot, you know, like under the mountain?
No. So it's unclear when he got these insects. These are just kind of invented now. It's not like this is not foreshadowed at all. He just kind of has
them. This is Deus Ex Earwig.
Yeah. The cover he did when he needed it, he flew up to heaven to borrow it, and he gave it back afterwards.
Of course. Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
So, after doing that, he rejoins the other pilgrims, and they flee all night towards the west until dawn. And they finally stop to rest when the sun comes up, and Tripitaka tells Wukong, you've just about killed me. So, they all start to get some rest. Tripitaka falls asleep on a pine root, Zhu Baji uses a rock as a pillow, and Xiao Wujing just dozes off next to the luggage. Wukong stays up, though, and he just starts climbing trees and playing about, you know, magic powers, immortality, and Buddhist vows aside, he is still, deep down, a monkey.
That's fair.
So, meanwhile, the Lord Equal to Earth arrives home, and he sees the gate is already open, everything looks neat and tidy, and he thinks, oh, maybe Clear Breeze and Bright Moon aren't so useless after all. Looks like they got up early to get the place ready for me. So he arrives into the main hall with all his students, and but he finds it still completely empty and unprepared. So he reckons, I guess they just forgot to close the gate last night. Maybe they're still asleep. His opinion on his two students he left behind was turning around very briefly, before being disappointed.
Yeah, I knew they weren't exactly the brain trust.
So they find the two lads' room and they hear snoring inside, but the door is locked, and they won't answer when they bang on it at all. Eventually, they're able to pry the door open and pull Clear Breeze and Bright Moon out of bed, but they still don't wake up. So the Lord is finally able to wake them with a spell, which involves drinking a glass of water and spitting it in their faces, which doesn't so much sound like a spell so much as just spitting water in their faces.
It does in the sense of magic is an extension of your will.
So upon being woken up, the two lads bow down to their master and they start telling him what happened. They're a bit terrified to tell him about the tree being knocked down, and they start crying before they're able to bring themselves to say it. But the Lord, equal to Earth, he isn't angry, though. He just asks if they'll be able to identify the monks if they see them again. And when they say yes, he asks the two of them to follow him, and he calmly tells the other students to stay behind and get the whips ready.
Ooh. Baller move. Okay.
So every good abbey needs, you know, a nice collection of whips. Yeah.
Given what's been in the news cycle lately, I feel like we should swiftly move on from that statement.
That's a fair point. I didn't think about that at all.
If you're not Irish, maybe that's for the best.
Did you see that the Archbishop said that he thinks that religious institutions shouldn't be scapegoated?
Oh, that was the most bullshit non-apology. I was like, we're really sorry. We clearly fucked up here. Also, don't make this all our fault, though, because it's you guys.
Even
and it was just like,
you know, just because we're the ones who did it doesn't mean we should be blamed.
His big argument seemed to be like, yeah, I mean, the government having funded these institutions, bore ultimate responsibility for the sadistic nuns we put in place to torture people and did not stop them. Which is just kind of like, yes, clearly there were intense abuses in institutions run by these nuns, but you know, ultimately the government didn't stop it. And it's just kind of like, I mean, it's not like you fuckers didn't have ultimate authority over these bitches. It's not like your ideology did not lead to this directly fucking happening.
There is an argument to be made that religious institutions don't bear sole responsibility. Government and the Gardaí and various other social institutions also participated very heavily in this, but yeah. To use the word scapegoat when you're describing the organizations that actually did it.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, people talk about, you know, the government and other social institutions bear responsibility for this, and absolutely they do. You know, they did these institutions in which so many people were incarcerated and abused.
We're talking about mother and baby homes, by the way.
If you want to look it up, there was a report that came out in Ireland this week, which was the whole thing is fucking horrifying. If you're not Irish, it's it's part of a really fun period we went through in our history where we incarcerated literally everyone in religious institutions. Not literally everyone, but it was just, it's kind of like all our problems, let's lock them away. And I feel like,
yeah,
if I'm going to get on a tangent here, I think this is something we really need to examine about ourselves and look at how we're applying this historic tendency to things like direct provision centers for asylum seekers. But the original point I was gonna make there while I'm still on this fucking soapbox is people are making the argument that yes, government and other social institutions bore a huge amount of responsibility. This is true. However, most of the social architecture of the state when it came to education, caring, and quite a lot of policy making was either run by or heavily involved members of the Catholic Church. They ran the schools, they ran the hospitals,
they still do.
They were social workers.
More than 90% of primary schools are still owned by the church.
Yeah, but if you are looking at the apparatus of the Irish state during the period of time that these homes were open, you cannot separate it from the Catholic Church. The state and the church were, for all intents and purposes, merged. It's nuns run schools, hospitals, religious orders run universities.
These women were also used as
as free labor.
As basically as slave labor. And not just by the church, but by corporations as well. In Watford, they were working for Hasbro.
Yeah, if you bought a Hasbro toy during the years, I think, what was it, like 1950 to 1996,
yeah,
there is a very good chance that the toy that you bought was made by someone who was incarcerated in a mother and baby home or a Magdalene laundry for being pregnant out of wedlock.
Yeah, I think the Operation Watford was mostly board games, but yeah.
Yeah, something... Yeah. Anyway, the whole situation is extremely fucked up.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I should leave in this entire rant because it's just got on so long at this point.
It has. I apologize. Sorry.
Oh no, I'm absolutely doing it too. I make no apologies. Fuck it.
I don't know how long we ranted for, but
this is my show.
Yeah, I mean, we could possibly leave it at mother and baby homes were extremely fucked up. Look it up. Anyway, whips and abbeys, not something I'm particularly up for putting up a one-liner about at the moment.
That's fair. That's why we started on this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So the Lord, equal to Earth, rides a cloud westwards with clear breeze and bright moon. He goes 500 kilometers in an instant and stops to look further west, but he can't see the pilgrims anywhere. He turns around and he looks eastward and realizes that he overestimated slightly how far they'd get. They only made it 60 kilometers in the night, not 500. He's being a bit unrealistic.
Okay.
So, he flies back to them, and clear breeze and bright moon identify the pilgrims for him. So when he confronts them, Wukong tries to attack him, but he has a jade handled duster made of a yak's tail that he uses as his weapon. The weapons are starting to get very strange at this point. Like, I can kind of understand, oh yeah, a rake, it's a big pole, it has spiky bits at the end, use that as a weapon, but now we're on to a duster.
Fair.
I feel like the author was kind of running out of ideas.
Maybe at this point, unless, wasn't a duster another type of weapon? Like a knuckle duster type of thing? I don't know, he's waving this deadly shit around anyway.
No, knuckle dusters, I think that's I think in this case they're referring to literal duster.
I'm going to look this up. Duster weapon. But yeah, you got to wonder, can the fucker not just give him a sword?
Like,
why does everything have to be a special thing? A knuckle duster is just brass knuckles.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not aware of this. Not being in a street gang from the late Victorian period, but
that'd be a good look for you, though. I think
Thank you. I think I could pull it off. There was also the M42 Duster, which was an anti-aircraft gun. I don't think that's what they're talking about either, but it would be
No.
cool if it was.
The Lord Equal to Earth is able to parry all of Wukong's attacks with his duster, and after getting a bit bored of this, he uses his magic to catch all five pilgrims, including the horse, inside his sleeves, trapping them. Baji tries to use his rake to tear his way out, but despite the fabric being soft to the touch, the rake doesn't damage it at all, so they're just trapped.
Shit.
So he carries them back to the abbey in his sleeves, and he dumps them out one by one, and he has them tied up to the pillars in the main hall, except the horse, which he ties up in the courtyard and gives it some hay to eat because it's a horse.
Good. That horse has been through too much, damn
He
it.
doesn't need to punish the horse.
Well, the horse didn't fuck up. The horse has just been doing his job, horsing about, you know. He's been they're horsing around. He's doing the work, you know. He deserves a rest and he deserves all the hay.
Yes.
I'm glad that's happened.
So the Lord tells his pupils that these men are monks, so they shouldn't be caught with knives or spears or axes or anything like that. But we are going to whip them. So
Right.
he has a special seven-thonged whip made of dragon hide, and they're going to whip Tripitaka first.
I had no idea what was going on.
No, and Wukong is worried that Tripitaka wouldn't sur won't survive this. So he volunteers to get flogged first instead.
Ah, that's actually kind of sweet.
And so the Lord Equal to Earth decides to give the Great Sage Equal to Heaven 30 lashes, one for each of the original ginseng fruits. Wukong, though, is able to turn parts of his body to steel to stop the whipping from harming him, and he takes the lashes easily. He can't even feel it at all.
Nice.
And so then Equal to Earth is going to move on to whip Tripitaka again. And Wukong speaks up again. He says Tripitaka is blameless. He didn't know anything about what they were doing. And he has to be flogged again in his place instead. And Equal
Starting
to
to
Earth
suspect he's
obliges.
enjoying it.
He literally can't feel it at all. Like, okay, have your own headcanons, but I want to be clear, like, that's what
Okay.
the text says.
All right.
After that, it's getting late, and Equal to Earth decides to go to bed and continue the whipping in the morning. So once they're left alone, Wukong promises to break them out again, and he frees himself by shrinking out of his ropes, and he unties everyone else. And once they're out of the way, or sorry, and once they're out of the gate, Wukong tells Baji to go uproot and bring back four willow trees. And Wukong strips the branches off them, and he and Baji carry them inside and tie them to the pillars where the four of them were tied up previously. Then he bites the tip of his tongue and spits blood onto them, changing them into perfect copies of the four of them. So they ride through the night for a second time, and when the sun comes up, Tripitaka is starting to nod off. Wukong gives out to him for having such little endurance. He says they'd better get off the road to rest so that travelers won't see him and laugh at him, which is just needlessly
This is your
mean-spirited.
fault. This
Yeah.
is absolutely like, thank you for getting me out of this, but this remains trouble that you specifically have caused, which I did not need to be involved in. Fucking hell.
So back at the Abbey, Equal to Earth declares that this time he is definitely going to actually whip Tripitaka. And the fake Tripitaka simply says, "Go ahead," and receives 30 lashes. In turn, he whips the fake Baji and Wu Jing, who both simply respond to everything with, "Go ahead." He finally moves on to the fake Wukong, and there is a problem. Unlike the others, when the fake Wukong is whipped, the real Wukong can actually feel it. He simply did not expect them to actually whip the fake one after they'd already whipped him twice yesterday, and he's completely
Right.
unprepared for it.
So, well, he gets his comeuppance.
So he panics and he immediately undoes the spell, and the four copies turn back into trees. So
Okay.
When he realizes they've just been whipping some willow trees, the Lord Ekeldar laughs bitterly. He's actually pretty impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I would be.
He figures all those stories he heard about Wukong from 500 years ago might actually be true. So he leaves the abbey and flies off west again, but he quickly catches up with them again. And he shouts down, "Pilgrim son, where are you running to? Give me back my ginseng tree."
Problem with that.
Yeah, slight problem. So Wukong turns to Tripitaka and he asks for permission to be violent.
Permission to use violence, sir!
And Tripitaka is too scared to reply, but Wukong doesn't wait for an answer anyway. He just immediately goes. So,
well, he didn't say no.
Yeah, Wukong, Baji, and Wujing all try to attack the Lord Equal to Earth together to overwhelm him. And they do not succeed at all. The fight lasts for half an hour before Equal to Earth simply recaptures them all in his sleeves again and brings them back to the abbey.
You know, yeah, okay.
So
Tripitaka is sick of this bullshit.
So Equal to Earth orders his students to bring out 10 large bales of cloth. And Baji thinks that maybe he just wants to make them some new robes, because
Baji ain't the brightest.
Yeah. But instead, he orders Tripitaka, Baji, and Wujing be cocooned entirely in cloth. And then lacquers them so that they're completely encased in weird, hardened cloth cocoons. Only their faces are left uncovered.
Does the horse get more hay?
Don't think they mentioned the horse, actually. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I hope he does.
I hope he does, too.
Baji asks for a second hole in case he needs to take a shit.
Smart.
Yeah. They don't respond to him. They just ignore him. So next, they bring out a giant frying pan, build a huge fire, and start boiling some oil in the pan. Equal to Earth is going to fry Wukong alive. So Wukong's not worried at first. He hasn't had a nice hot bath in quite a while, and his skin has gotten very dry recently. I'm not joking. That's his logic.
Not a lot of time to moisturize.
But when the oil actually starts to boil, he starts to reconsider. Like, if it's normal oil, he'll be fine. It won't harm him at all. But there might be some kind of magic at play here that he doesn't know about, and maybe he should be worried about that. So he starts to look around the garden, and he sees a stone line. And in one motion, he dives towards it, bites his tongue and spits blood on it, turns it into a clone of himself, all tied up the same way, and the real Wukong disappears into the cloud again, and no one notices. So when Equal to Earth orders his students to throw Wukong in, they have some difficulty lifting up the stone lion. In the end, it takes 20 of them to pick it up and throw it into the pan, and when they do, it goes straight through the bottom of it, ripping a huge hole in it and throwing boiling oil everywhere, badly blistering all the Taoists.
Yeah.
So, looking again, they see that it wasn't Wukong they threw in, but a statue of a lion. And Equal to Earth is very annoyed. Even if Wukong wanted to escape, he didn't have to ruin his frying pan. It was unnecessary.
I mean, as someone who had a housemate butcher a good skillet, I'm with Equal to Earth on this one.
Did he, use iron or a steel wool on it or something?
Let me tell you about this frying pan. Motherfucker. I lived in a house just off Haysbury Street in Dublin with about 20 other people because the rent was very cheap and I was a student and also drinking and taking an awful lot of drugs. So there were frying pans in the kitchen that had kind of come with the house, which is grand. However, they were all scratched the fuck up. I could not cook anything. This was an unpleasant situation. So I decided I'm going to go out and I'm going to get myself a frying pan And I left it in the kitchen for 10 fucking minutes before bringing it up to my locker in my room. And somebody was cooking peaches and cheese in it with a metal spatula when I came back down. Peaches and cheese. What are you even doing with peaches and cheese in a frying pan? What does that make? Why?
I take it it wasn't like even halloumi or anything, like cheddar or something.
I was like, I don't know, it was some sort of soft cheese, like a mascarpone or something.
Okay.
Yeah,
That.
with a spatula.
I'm sorry for your loss.
I was so upset. I did not have the money for that skillet. I was
And then I
livid.
presume you beat them over the head with it.
No, I cried.
Yeah, that's also reasonable.
Yeah. So, Simone, if you are listening to this, I don't give a fuck that it's been nearly 10 years. I will fucking find you and tear you apart. I will walk to France and take my goddamn vengeance. Do you hear me, you frog motherfucker?
See, I told you should be in a Victorian gang.
I have strong feelings about frying pans.
Yeah, so anyway, Equal to Earth laments that trying to keep a hold of Wukong is like trying to handle Mercury. Which I think is an apt analogy, because you can't possibly do that, and B, attempting to do it will kill
Will
you.
drive you insane. Yeah. Yeah. No, that works. That's perfect.
So he decides to just give up on capturing the Great Sage at all and just fry Tripitaka instead. So he sends out his students to fetch another giant frying pan, because he has more than one, apparently.
Oh, look at me with my many frying pans. Fuck you.
They start cutting Tripitaka out of the lacquered cloth. Wukong has been watching from the clouds, though, and when he hears this, he reveals himself and he offers himself up to go back into the frying pan. He doesn't want them to kill Tripitaka. So he claims that he just really needed to take a piss, and he didn't want to spoil the Lord Equal to Earth's cooking oil. And now that he's relieved himself, he's ready to go into the frying pan.
Seems legit.
End of volume one.
Okay.
That's how you end on a cliffhanger.
Nice. Okay. This seems like it could go on forever, and it's just a matter of waiting for the Lord Equal to Earth to be fucking tired of it. There was something I wanted to say, but I cannot think of it right now.
Was it related to frying pans, by any chance?
It wasn't, and it's hurtful to me that you would bring that up.
I'm so sorry.
I'm just very upset. I just hope he meets a very gruesome end. Possibly choking on his disgusting peach mascarpone fried concoction. Maybe he pisses off a Taoist immortal and gets shoved into a pan of boiling oil and gets to think about what he's done. But yeah. Anyway, I think that's the end of the podcast. I need to leave. Gotta hunt down a fucker. And start walking to France.